حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين أما بعد فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد كان لكم في رسول الله أسوة حسنة صلوات محمد subject on this night is the sirat of the prophet that we had been discussing. And the declaration of the message at the beginning was followed by opposition from those people who opposed the message, and as usual, batil and falsehood will always oppose the message of truth when it is declared openly. If the truth shuts up and remains quiet, batil doesn't have a problem with it. But once you start declaring it openly, then you see this is the situation. The Prophet, he declared Islam openly, and so those people in Makkah, the chiefs of Quraysh, right away knew that they had to oppose this message, and they decided to follow a twofold plan. And the reason they made it a twofold plan is because there were different people who were Muslims and were becoming Muslims. All out of the Muslims, there were people who belonged to tribes, influential families, had big names and were big shots. And there were people who were poor, did not belong to any family or tribe, and were slaves, and these type of people. And they could not deal with both of them the same way. Meaning they can't just go to someone who comes from a tribe and torture him, because the tribe will turn against them. Because in those days, it didn't matter what wrong that my tribesman did, but you can't touch him. Right? So, they made a twofold plan. In order to take care of those people who belong to tribe, they all, the chiefs, got together and said that, alright, the tribe will take care of them, and we ask each tribe that if any of their, any member of their tribe becomes Muslim, then they have to take care of him. We will not do anything to him, they have to take care of him. But if someone else who is a slave or did not belong to a tribe, if he becomes a Muslim, then he will be open game for everyone. Right? And they will do whatever they can with him, and no one will have anything to say about that. So the early days, you see, the Muslims, the people who accepted Islam, we saw the price that they had to pay for accepting Islam. Now, amongst the early people who became Muslim, the first one to accept Islam was the wife of the Prophet, Khadija. After that, the next person after that was Zayd ibn Haritha. Zayd ibn Haritha, who was the servant of the Prophet and Khadija. Now, obviously, you know, like Imam Ali is mentioned here, but in our ideology, we don't even mention the name of Imam Ali because he was always a Muslim. And after Zayd ibn Harisa was the aunt of the Prophet Umm Fadl. Right? She became Muslim. And after that, the fourth person to accept Islam was Abu Dharr. Now, when Abu Dharr accepted Islam, he accepted Islam, didn't stay too long, and left to go back to his hometown. So he never had to deal with the persecution in Makkah. He didn't have to deal with that. He had to deal with it after everyone became Muslim. Right? Because when he came back and saw that everything was topsy-turvy now, and what the Prophet thought is not in practice, that's when he started to speak up. Right? So now, the fifth person to accept Islam was a person by the name of Khalid ibn Sa'id ibn As. He was the fifth person to accept Islam. Khalid ibn Walid ibn As. Now, who was this person? This person was from a tribe that had sworn animosity to the tribe of the Prophet and to the Prophet himself. He was from the tribe of Bani Umayyah. Khalid ibn Walid ibn As was from the tribe of Bani Umayyah. And this is the fifth person accepting Islam. There is no name of Islam anywhere. No one knows about Islam. Islam hasn't been declared openly yet. Everything is still secret. There are only 3-4 people around the Prophet who are Muslim. And it is at that time he became a Muslim. And it so happened to him that he saw a dream. And in that dream he saw that someone is, you know, that there's a trench that is before him. And the trench is filled with fire. It's blazing. Fire. He saw the trench and he was being pushed towards it. And he's trying to save himself from being pushed, but you see that he was being pushed and pushed. So now as he was being pushed behind, he was thinking, who would want to kill me and who would want to push me in the pit of fire? I mean, who would want to do that to me? So then when he turned around, he saw his father who was pushing him. His father was pushing him. And as he was about to fall into the pit, someone came and saved him. Someone came and held his hand, saved him, brought him to a safe place, and he was in a garden. And first he was relieved that he didn't fall into the pit. Then he was thankful. He was thankful that someone saved him. And he turned around and recognized the face. He recognized the face that this is Abdullah's orphan. Now, no one knew the Prophet by the name of the Prophet, you know. And everyone knew him because he was there. They're all living together. But he never spoke with him or, you know, was friends with him. But he knew who he was. He recognized him. He said, he saved me from the fire. The dream was so real for him that, you know, he couldn't think of anything else but the dream when he woke up. He said, you know, this must be a sign for something. It was so real. It was so real, it must be a sign for something. So he said, I need to investigate this. I need to investigate this. And he went searching for the Prophet. He went there and he said, yeah, I want to meet him and see what's going on. Right? Now in this situation, understand that there's no news of Islam anywhere. There's nothing happening. He just went on this dream that he had. This dream that he just went there. And here, before I tell you the meeting that he had with the Prophet, just let me give you a point here that we can reflect on. You see, a person, and lot of people see dreams. They see dreams, they see signs, and Allah has different ways of showing signs to people or guiding them. And many people, they see the signs. And we see that Allah's signs are everywhere. You know, you see that, you know, you are walking around, you go out of your house, you don't even go out of it, even in your house, there's signs of Allah. Or when you leave your house, there's signs of Allah. Everyone sees, for example, a tree. They see a tree every day. But you see, most people, everyone, they see the signs, but only a few investigate those signs. Only a few investigate those signs, and fewer find guidance in those signs. I mean, everyone sees a tree, and yeah, to them it's one of a thousand trees that are there. There are 1,000 trees around, who cares? But if someone wants to see a sign in that, they can find Allah in that. They can find Allah through that, if they want to see a sign. This person saw a dream. And this is about a person who comes from a tribe that is the enemy of his own tribe. He has no business going to him. But he saw that he needs to see what this means. He followed that dream. And he came to the Prophet. He came to the Prophet, and without even saying anything, he asked him a question. Because the dream is on his mind, that's all he could think of. So the first thing that came out of his mind, his mouth, is, do you want to save me from the fire? Do you want to save me from the fire? Right? You know, first when he saw the Prophet, he recognized, this is the person in my dream. He knew it, this is the one. And he says, do you want to save me from the fire? Now, obviously, you know, when you ask a stranger that question, and he's like, you know, obviously will say, what are you talking about? Right? What are you talking about? Now, there's no Islam anywhere. Islam is only with a three or four people. He's the fifth person. He's the fifth person. Islam is nowhere. He just asked the Prophet, do you want to save me from the fire? The Prophet replied, no, your father wants to push you into the fire. He said, your father wants to push you into the fire, and I want to show you a way where you can be saved. And he says, what is that? He says, قُولُوا لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ تُفْلِحُوا. He says, say La ilaha illallah and you will be saved from the fire. And when he heard that, right away he accepted Islam.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
The fifth person to say, you ought to accept Islam. Right?
Was from the tribe.
Was from the tribe of Umayyah. Bani Umayyah. Right? He was from the tribe of Bani Umayyah. Before anyone accepted Islam from Bani Hashim, there was a person from Bani Umayyah who was a Muslim. There's no one from Bani Hashim who was a Muslim, except for the Prophet and Imam Ali. Right? The first person to accept Islam outside of these three, four people was from Bani Umayyah. He accepted Islam. Now he, obviously, because of the order of the Prophet, kept quiet for 3 years. 3 years, he didn't say anything to anyone. He learned from the Prophet. And then when the Prophet declared Islam openly, so now he was also known around as a Muslim. His father was a Muslim hater. He was a Muslim hater, and he was known for his hatred for Muslims. And he used to walk around with a rod in his hand looking for Muslims to beat up in the streets. He used to walk around with a rod in his hand, and he was known that any Muslim you see, he used to beat them up. Right? So now what happened is that when he was walking, and he said, you know what, I'm going to go and, you know, beat the person who's causing all this. So as he was going, someone told him that, listen, you want to beat up other people, but your own son has accepted Islam. Your own son is a Muslim. He became so enraged that he came back. He asked him, you know, did you leave our guards? Did you leave our guard? Did you stop worshipping our guards? So he said, they cause no harm, nor they can benefit. Right? He said, what do you believe in? He said, I believe that there is no God but Allah. And that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
His father right away beat him up so bad that the rod broke. And in that, while he was beating, his son ran away and he hid in the mountains around Makkah. He hid around mountains in Makkah. 3 days later, when he didn't come back home, his father hired bounty hunters. The first time bounty hunters were hired to hunt down Muslims. He hired hunters to go in, track him down and catch him. Well, they came, they went around, they tracked him down and they arrested him. They caught him and they brought him back. They brought him back and he was injured because of that hit he took with the rod. And he came back there and then his father, he told him, my son, until now you saw my mercy. Wow. Now you will see my anger. Now you will see my anger. No food or drink for you until you repent or die. No food, no water, nothing. You will be held and either you repent or you die. Now I want to see who feeds you. So the son replied to the father and he said, Father, it was never you who was feeding me, and it will never be you who is taking care of me. Allah is the one who has always provided for me, and He will provide for me. And so he said, all right, I want to see this. And he locked him up in the room. 3 days, no food, no water. 3 days, no food, no water, until you see that someone, and he became so weak, he was about to die. And someone in the house had pity on him, and they helped him to escape. They helped him to escape, and he ran away again into the mountains. And this time, he knew better not to get caught, because he was already caught once. Now he was always on the watch out. And he lived in the mountains for 5 years. 5 years he lived in those mountains, right? Anytime he used to sneak to the Prophet to meet him and go back. And he used to do that. Right? Until his father became sick. He became sick. And when he fell sick, he declared to everyone that, you know what? I don't blame my son for this, what he has done. I don't blame him for this. I blame the person who caused him to be like this. If I get up from this sick bed, from this sickness, and he asked help from Lat and Uzza, the idols. Lat and Uzza, give me the power to get up from here so I can go and kill that person. I can go and kill the Prophet. That is my life's mission now. If you give me the strength to get up and cure me of my illness, I'm going to go and assassinate the Prophet. So, when the son heard about that his father is ill, and he made this dua to Lat and Uzza, then he also made a dua right away, and it says, Allahumma la tarfa'u abada. He said, Allah, do not ever raise him from the sickbed. If he wants to kill the Prophet, I do not want him to get from that, he should die in a sickbed. And that's what happens, he died there. He died there, and then his son, the fifth Muslim, Khalid ibn Sa'id ibn As, got some relief and He was one of those people who migrated to Ethiopia when the time came. So just understand, this was one person. I gave you one example, the fifth Muslim. And you see, he belonged to a tribe that is a known tribe, Bani Umayyah. And that's why it was Bani Umayyah's job to take care of him. No one would do anything to him. Others knew where he was or hiding and this and that. They would see him, but they cannot touch him. Why? Because if they touched him, then Bani Umayyah would get angry with that tribe or whoever belonged to that, whoever did that with him. They would want revenge. That's why no one did anything to him. But now let's come to the sixth Muslim. The sixth Muslim was Khabbab ibn Athar. Khabbab was his name, Ibn Athar. Khabbab, he comes from the region which is now Iraq. As he was a child, he was stolen or kidnapped in a raid in his village. And when they kidnapped him, he was taken, obviously, and sold as a slave. One from one master to another, until he came to Makkah. When he came to Makkah, there was a woman by the name of Umme Ammar. She saw him in the market, in the slave market, and she bought him. And looking at him, he was a very intelligent person. He was young and intelligent. And she obviously wanted to make the most out of him, meaning money-wise, because that's where slaves were useful. You buy a slave to get the most out of him, you know? She saw that he's an intelligent guy, so he can make more money than the average slave who's just doing, you know, hard labor. So she made him an apprentice in an ironsmith, with an ironsmith. He became an apprentice there and learned how to do iron work until he became really good at it. He was a master ironsmith, became one. He was known throughout Makkah because they would trust his work, and his work was the best in Makkah. He was very well known, but he was still a slave. He was still a slave, and whatever he earned went to her, and she took care of whatever he needs. And in his young life, before Islam was declared or opened, he used to think. Right, he used to think of the situation of the world that he's living in. And he would write it down in his memoirs. And he would often say in his memoirs that this darkness that I'm living in today, looking at his own life, what his own life was, going from one house to another, being a slave of people, and what his life was in as a child and what it became now. He used to say that, in this darkness that I'm living in, this dark light that I'm living in, I am sure that there's going to be a dawn tomorrow. And I will be waiting for that dawn. And when this was one of those people that when he heard of the Prophet, and he also reached him, because of the fact that he was one of those people who knew that what this society had was wrong, and he was looking for the truth. When he was looking for the truth, he came and he saw it and he accepted it right away. He accepted it right away, and you see that he became the sixth Muslim, Khabbab ibn Athar. When he became the sixth Muslim, obviously the first 3 years he didn't tell anyone that he's a Muslim, because all the Muslims were told to hide their faith. No, everything in secrecy. Everything in secrecy. But you see that when it opened up, when the Islam was declared, he was the first person to openly declare Islam, and without any fear he said, I am a Muslim and I'm proud to be a Muslim, and what you all are doing is wrong, and it's best for you to accept Islam. Now my friends, understand this. He was a slave. He did not have a tribe to back him or to help him. Khabbab ibn Athar, when he declared his Islam, and the owner, Umme Ammar, was told that your slave has become a Muslim, Umme Ammar told her brother, Saba ibn Abdul Uzza, she told her brother that, go and see if this is the truth. So he went there to the shop, with a gang of people, you know, and this is always the way of battle, that they can't come alone to fight, they have to come with allies.
Yeah,
right? So then what happened? So he came with his gang over there to meet him, right? And he asked him, you know, did you leave your faith? And Khabbab said, no, I did not leave my faith. He said, then tell us, what do you believe in? He said, I believe there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And as soon as he said that, the whole gang jumped him. The whole gang jumped him. Now understand this, he is a slave. There's no one who's going to back a slave or, you know, support him or, you know, raise any voice for him. They jumped him. And then after that, you see Khabbab, you beat him up and they would tell him to recant his faith and come back to our guards and say that, and he always said no. Allah is God. La ilaha illallah. They would torture him then. They would put him in an iron coat from his old body. They would put an iron coat on him and they would lay him on the ground to bake in the sun. And he would bake in the iron coat and then they would say, accept, you know, Lat and Uzza as your God. And he would say, La ilaha illallah. And every day this would go on. And the owner also, she didn't also give up. She said, you know what, I will take care of him. And she would burn a iron rod, make it hot, as you would brand someone. And she would brand his head with it.
Wow.
She would brand him on the head with it. And he would be branded on the head. And this was being done publicly, out in the street, so that everyone can watch it. Everyone can watch it. And, you know, this was being done. And it was in one of these sessions that the Prophet was walking by. He was walking by there and he saw this. And they used to, my friend, understand this, and I want you to see this. He looked at what was happening. He saw the pain that Khabbab was in. And the Prophet made a dua to Allah. He said, Allahumma ansur Khabbaba. Allah help Khabbab. The Prophet never made a dua of help for any other companion of his. This is the only companion that the Prophet made this dua for. He said, Allahumma ansur Khabbaba. Allah help Khabbab. Right? He made this dua. He saw it. Imagine the situation that he was in. Right? And when he made the dua, you see Allah answered his dua. The owner, Umme Ammar, fell ill. And her illness was not known. Doctors came and analyzed her, didn't know what her illness was. And she used to have severe headaches. Severe headaches. And they advised her that the only, you know, temporary cure for these headaches to make you feel better is to burn your head. And every day she was given the treatment of an iron rod being burned, and she would be burned on her head. That would relieve her of her pain. And this was done until she died anyway in that pain. But Allah wanted that the same torture she is giving Khabbab, Allah wanted her to get the same torture in her life. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Now friends, here, understand this, you know. And obviously, this did not end here. When she died, it wasn't the end of his problems. Because when she died, Khabbab became open game for everyone. Now he's a slave with no master. You know, now he's a slave with no master. Now, Abu Jahl and everyone, they used to torture him. They used to put burning cinder blocks, like coal, on the ground, and they would lay him on top of it until the coal cools down.
Wow.
Right? They would lay on top of it. His back was seared, it was charred, and the skin was burned forever, and the flesh had turned white because of the burning. Like how you would char flesh, meat. Right? And he went through that, but you see, my friends, understand this. He went through that torture, and he lived long. He lived long, right? In the time that, for example, when Muslims became powerful, they had a state, they became powerful, they conquered Iran, and a lot of wealth came amongst the Muslims. Many people, whenever they used to see Khabbab, would request him to show his back to them. So that when his back was shown, and they still it was white. His flesh was there. Still it used to be white. His flesh was there through the burning. They used to see his back just to remind themselves that what we had gone through, so that today we became Muslim, it is thanks to these people who suffered. Who went through those tortures to bring us Islam. Just to remind themselves that this was Khabbab. Right? That this is Khabbab. Right? And you see, my friends, here is one thing I want to add and make clear. Inshallah, you know, then I'll explain a little bit more. Then we'll end. The Prophet, and I want you to understand, you know, he's teaching us ideology. You know, when the Prophet was walking by and saw that Khabbab was being tortured, you see that he did not do anything to stop it. He just made a dua. He's made dua. And they used to torture people in front of the Prophet because they knew that he is the one who is more hurt watching this than the people who are being tortured. And it's the one. The Prophet used to see this, but you see that it could be questioned that, well, why didn't he go and stop them? You know, he could have held their hands and said, stop it, you know, or done something. But you see, the torture was being taken place, and the Prophet, all he did was make a dua. All he did was make a dua. I mean, understand this, my friend, so that we know. Those people who were doing these tortures, their aim is not to torture these slaves. Their goal was not to hurt these slaves or these people who became Muslim. Their ultimate goal was to hurt and kill the Prophet. But they did not have an excuse to get at him. Understand this? They did not have an excuse to get at him. He had the protection of Bani Hashim. They had no excuse that they can get to him. So they wanted him to come in between and come there so that they can harm, that if he comes in between, then they would have an excuse that he came in between what we were doing, that's why we had to do this. That's why we had to do this. So the Prophet is teaching us that if you see someone being helped, if you can help him, that's good. But look at wisdom first. What is happening? Look at wisdom. Do not get involved when you know that they want you to get involved.
Al-Qaeda.
My friends, understand this. Whenever you see, if you see a Muslim nation, if you see a believing nation not being involved in anything that is happening around it, with all the hardship that's going on, they are just following the path of the Prophet. They knew that the altar, they want them to get involved so they have their excuse to invade them. They want them to. That's why the Prophet did not get involved. He made a dua. Because that is the best thing you can do at that time. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Muhammad.
Yeah. Understand how he his action become an ideology for us. Why do we do the things that we are doing? Understand why do we get involved? Because there's reasons, there's wisdom behind. They want the believing nation to get involved so that they have an excuse to attack them. The Prophet also knew, if he gets involved, they'll have an excuse to attack him also. And they would kill him, and they'll say it was an accident, we didn't mean to kill him, but he got involved. It's his fault. Right. This is exactly what happens. So this is the first thing. The second thing, my friends, is the Prophet is teaching, you know, because this Khabbab, afterwards, when Islam was growing, he was amongst the people, you know, if you remember, he used to teach other Muslims. When Muslims used to come in, he used to teach other Muslims. He was the person, you have heard the incident about the sister of Umar, right? Fatima al-Khattab, Bint Khattab. When Umar got to know that she and her husband became Muslim and he came there to, you know, torture them, right? Khabbab was hiding in their house. Khabbab was hiding in their house because he used to come to them to teach them Quran. He used to come to them to teach them Quran. And he was hiding in his house at the time Umar came there. And you see, when this happened, the idea behind this is this, my friends. The Prophet is teaching us the method of propagation. He said the way you propagate and how you propagate is not that you go to everyone. The way of the Prophet was that he would first, whenever people become Muslim, would train them. When he would train them, then he would give them the responsibility of other people who become Muslim. And now it's their job to go and train others. He didn't go to everyone and start training them. He used to train a group, and then that group would go and train others. They would teach others. They would do that to others. And this is how Islam was growing. This is the method that the Prophet taught. How you propagate Islam. Because you can't reach everyone. You can't go to everyone and say, okay, you know, this is your appointment, 15 minutes. 15 minutes for you, 15 minutes for you. 15 minutes is not enough. And the second thing is that how many people are you going to reach by that? You know, so you teach people and then you let them train others. Let them teach others. And this is how it grows. This is how it goes. He used to delegate that responsibility. Khabbab was one of those teachers. He would go there and teach others. And they were his responsibility. When he couldn't handle it, then he would come to the Prophet and say that, you know, I don't know the answer of this question. Right? But he would let them do that. This is how Islam was propagated. But Khabbab went through this torture. He was a sixth Muslim, my friends. And the torture that he went through, Muslims used to remember that. Muslims used to remember that. Why? Because they wanted to see where Islam came from and how Islam came to us. Yeah, it is time. And it was in the court of Umar also it was done. In the court of Umar, that Umar had asked Khabbab that show us your back so that everyone can see your back. And then he showed his back so that everyone can see the tortures that Islam went through, the Muslims went through, so that Islam can be there, and so we can understand how Islam reached us. It wasn't always through wealth. Now Muslims are wealthy. They have oil, they have all these things. But they used to be reminded of that. My friends, this is why those who stood up for the truth at the beginning were the true defenders of Islam and the helpers of Islam. They were the defenders of Islam. And it is for this Islam that the best that we had and the best that Allah had sent, the best lady that Allah had sent, died for. And she became an example for us so that when we remember her, we understand where Islam came from. My friends, it is in the words of Hadith that are said that Fatima is one of Allah's secrets. Fatima is one of Allah's secrets that He had sent to the world. That was Fatima. Understand, who is Fatima? She was, you know, she, imagine this, when Islam and when Imam, when her Imam was in, was being put down, it was Fatima who was the only supporter when no one else came out to support. My friends, Islam is one. It is usul al-deen. Tawheed, nabuwat, imamat, qiyamat, this is Islam. Anyone who tries to put this down, then it is a job of a believer to go and defend it and support it. And when imamat was being put down and taken away from its place, even though the inner imamat, no one can take that away from the imams, she was defending the outer imamat that was taken away. That's what she was defending. And just understand who is Fatima that she's defending this. You know, she was, when this happened, she was knocking on doors of people. She was knocking on the doors of people, going out and knocking on the doors, trying to teach them and tell them, what are you doing? You know, our 11th Imam, Imam, he had said that Jaddati, this is just to let us know who Fatima is. Understand who is Fatima. He says, Jaddati Fatima Hujjatullahi alayna wa nahnu hujjatun ala al-khalq. That our grandmother Fatima is a hujjat and a proof on us, and we are a proof on the world. This is Fatima. She is a hujjat on the imams. She's a hujjat on the imam. The imams are hujjat on us. Yeah? Who understands the position of Fatima? Who can understand the position of Fatima? You know, Ali understood the position of Fatima. You know, Imam Ali had said, Sabartho, I was patient in trials where my eyes had thorns in them and my throat had a bone stuck in it. I went through trials where there were thorns in my eyes and bones in my throat. Imagine going through that trial. I went through those trials. But kalla sabarto. But I lost my patience when I lost Fatima. Separation from Fatima. Separation from Fatima. Fatima, your separation has ripped apart my patience. Ali understood who Fatima was. Hadith of Qudsi. Allah says in a Hadith of Qudsi to the Prophet, he says, Laulak lamma khalaqtul aflak. He said, oh Muhammad, if you were not there, I wouldn't have created this universe. If you were not there, I wouldn't have created this universe. And then he says, walawla Ali lamma khalaqtuka. If Ali wasn't there, I wouldn't have created you. If Ali was there, I wouldn't have created you. Walaula Fatima lamma khalaqtuma. If Fatima wasn't there, I wouldn't have created both of you. Imagine, who is
Fatima Ali knew who Fatima was. Losing her, Ali lost his patience. Couldn't be patient anymore. Losing Fatima. My friend, let me just tell you something. You know, there's a hadith from the... There's a hadith in which it says that inna allaha yarda li rida al Fatima wa ghadaba li ghadab al Fatima. He says that Allah, He is angry when He is happy, He is pleased when Fatima is pleased. And He is angry when Fatima is angry. Allah's happiness isn't Fatima's happiness. His anger isn't Fatima's anger. So my friends, let me tell you now. You know, the height of ismat, the height of infallibility, the height of infallibility is that Allah's happiness should be your happiness and Allah's anger should be your anger. But imagine the rank of Fatima, that Fatima's happiness is Allah's happiness and her anger is Allah's. And this is that Fatima that when Ali's wilayat was taken away from him, his apparent wilayat, not the hidden wilayat that Ali has and all the imams have, and no one can take it. But when his apparent wilayat is taken away, she's going knocking on the doors of people and saying, "Anasitum Ghadir al Qawm? Have you forgotten Ghadir al Qawm?" And you know, the excuses they're giving her is that, Fatima, you came too late, it's already too late now. You should have come earlier, you should have come before. Then when she heard these excuses, she used to tell them that the Imam, he said the hadith of the Prophet, the Imam is like the Kaaba doesn't come to the people have to come to the Kaaba. This was Fatima. This was Fatima, you know. Whenever, just imagine what Fatima is going through. Imagine this and why she's doing this. It is a movement that she wants to make people realize. She's trying to make people understand the truth of Islam. What they have done to Islam. She is the defender of Islam. So now when you see Fatima, just imagine when you are an honorable lady. In her own words, we know the concept of hijab. When she was asked, what is the best thing for a woman to do? She had replied to Imam Ali, the best thing for a woman is not to be heard or seen by any man. Not to be heard and seen by any man. In her own words, she has said, if you are a woman, then you shouldn't be heard by anyone. Just answer one question, my brothers and sisters. Why is Fatima crying so loudly? Why is she crying so loudly that the whole of Medina can hear? In her own words, she knows that she should cry slowly and softly. But why is she crying so loudly? That the whole of Medina, there's an earthquake in Medina, that people are being affected by her, crying so loudly that they ask Ali to build a place for her outside of Medina so that she can go and cry there. Doesn't she know that she should be heard by others? Don't you understand that Fatima is protesting and her cries are a protest as to what you have done to the Imam of the time? If Fatima could have wanted, she could have made one dua and everything would have changed. Don't you see the effect that Fatima has? If she says something, then everything could have changed. Her words, if she says something, then Allah will make it come to pass. She just told Hassan and Hussein when they were children that the tailor is stitching your clothes when they ask for the clothes of me. She said the tailor is stitching those clothes. There was no tailor, there was no clothes. But because she said it, now Allah wanted to come to happen. He sent Jibreel with the clothes from heaven. He said, this is Fatima. Yes, my friend, when the door fell on Fatima, he was injured. When they struck Fatima, she was injured. She had wounds. And her wounds and her injuries were so bad. Her injuries were so bad that some of those injuries that she had on her, she was hiding from Imam Ali. She was hiding from her husband that I don't want to show these to him. Maybe he'll worry about my injuries. Maybe he'll worry about my ribs being broken. Maybe he'll worry about the fact that my ribs are broken. I don't want to show it to him. And as we have a ziyarat, we have a dua to the Imam. In that dua it is said, Ya Imam, you are waiting for the revenge of your grandmother. Don't you see that the ribs of your grandmother are broken? We are waiting for you to come back and take the revenge of those broken ribs. Fatima began the message, but Fatima, I'll tell you, your daughter finished the movement you started. In Wasiyat we said that it is said, these lines are said in a Marthiya, these lines are said, that not only was she wept and the injuries from the webs, but she was slapped in the face.
Y'all say,